Music from Regina Carter from 1997, We Write a Song. You're listening to Afternoon Jazz at 90.5 FM, WSNC Winston-Salem. Jazz in all its colors from the campus of Winston-Salem State University. I'm Jim Steele, glad to be with you this afternoon for the May edition of Bookmarked with Sarah McCoy. We're always happy to have Sarah McCoy in the studio because she always brings fun guests, and she's always, you know, just a lot of really positive energy that comes to the studio, so we're always delighted. Hi, Sarah. Welcome.
Hi, guys. I'm so happy to be here, and this is a particularly exciting episode of Bookmark. Look who we have. David Sedaris.
Welcome, David.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, so excited to have you here. And I know you're here to do an event tonight. We'll go ahead and promo that at Bookmarks, our friends, downtown at 6:30. He's going to be down there. And while it is ticketed, and they all sold out, I tried to get a ticket. And within, let me tell you, they put the link up online. And within 3 hours, gone. I got on. My husband got on. We are all like, why can't we get tickets? And then they opened it
oh,
up
really?
To... Yeah, you're popular in this town. So sold out, and people can still go downtown. And, oh, no, they can't. They closed that too, didn't they, Jim?
Well, they can
They
press,
sold it out.
Well, they can press their finger, their faces on the window, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought that they meant that after the event, people can come and...
For the book, right? book for the lining signing. They open, like, a line signing. After your event, right?
Oh.
So there's ticketed people. This is how popular you are in Winston-Salem. People are coming out with tickets to see to be inside sitting, to hear you speak and be in your aura. Oh. And then they get a whole different ticket, if they couldn't get those, to then stand outside and wait to get signing. But even those were ticketed because those stopped at 10 a.m. this morning. So now if you're listening... You're just going to have to listen live and listen to him talk here and then order his book. So that's
oh,
where we're at.
God, there's nothing to be done. Well, I guess I'm going to be in Davidson tomorrow. Maybe you could go
you
there.
You could drive there, yeah. Yeah, well, or we could just
I'm going to be somewhere else in North Carolina after that.
Well, you're a North Carolina boy, right?
Well, I wasn't born here, but I grew up here.
Do you consider yourself that? North Carolina home or?
Well, we have a house now on the coast of North Carolina.
Outer Banks, is that right?
It's on Emerald Isle.
Beach house.
And it's, yeah, it's
Make
a beach house.
Make a note
house.
Of that.
Yeah.
And, but, and so we spent some time there. But, you know, I was born in Binghamton, New York. And my sister and I were talking about this earlier, how I go back to Binghamton from time to time. And I feel like, oh, I'm back where I'm supposed to be.
Really?
Yeah. Even though we left there when I was in second grade. I don't know. It just feels, it's a beat up old town.
Yeah.
The town that I'm from.
And that feels
Whereas
like
every time you go to Raleigh, it's bigger and you don't recognize it. Nothing has changed in Binghamton. Nothing
Binghamton.
Has changed. Like, it's not even like, look, a subway open. It's not even that.
Wow.
There's my aunt lived there, and there was a corner store in my aunt's neighborhood. That's still there. That same store, owned by the same people.
Oh, this is his sister Lisa, if you're watching on Facebook Live, by the way. We get to meet his family. That's kind of a big deal, considering all your work, right? I always wonder, you know, as writers, if we write about our family, obviously you can get away with it much better than I can, trust me, but we write about our family, how does our family feel about being sort of immortalized in books? And I know, particularly in Calypso, I felt so much family going on in this, right? Even though it's a collection of 21 stories, that's new. Before, right? Your publisher said they were essays.
No, I would call those essays.
You'd call these essays?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I read somewhere that now they're referring to them as stories.
I don't think so. I mean...
Personal stories.
I guess I would think of them as personal essays.
As personal essays?
Yeah.
I like that. That
I mean, it sounds like a dry term. I mean, when I'm working on something, I think I'm working on a story.
Do you?
I mean, I think of it as a story. I don't think of it as an essay.
Huh.
I guess because I want it to move like a story. I guess sometimes when I think of an essay, I think, you know, you just think of something that's kind of dry, that's about, you know, the history of a building or something.
Right.
I mean, sometimes I write about things. Right? Like there's an essay in there about cursing in other languages. So that's about a thing. There's no story. There's no, it doesn't move the way a story does. It's.
So when you sit down, this is kind of crafty, but But when you sit down to write, I know I sort of have an idea of sort of the arc I want for mm-hmm. it to follow. Do you have that already in mind?
No.
Or do you just write the no. story?
I mean, I had a problem with a tooth not long ago, and I went to a dentist in England, and she said, there's nothing wrong with your tooth. But I, you know, whenever I drank anything cold, it was like I was biting into an extension cord.
Jesus.
And so then I went to Australia, and the dentist said, there's nothing wrong with your tooth. And by that point, I couldn't even rest my tongue on top of it. And then I went to San Francisco, and they said, they can see the crack in this tooth from space.
You know, we need to perform so it was messed up.
Yeah, we need to perform a root canal tomorrow. So I wrote about that, but the way I wrote about it, it was, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened. And I don't believe anybody wants to read a story like that. Mm. And then this, and then this. And I realized, writing it over and over and over, that what I really wanted to write about was this bar I went to in Japan that just challenged every idea I had about Japan. But it fit into the tooth story. Anyway, after trying this and trying this and trying this and trying this, it winds up being a story about this bar. And so it did, when I set out to write it, I just thought, okay, this tooth has cost me so much money. I'm going to make my money back. And then some, by writing about this tooth. But I wanted it to be a story that would move in a certain way. You know what I mean?
Like, right.
I guess I thought of it as a... I didn't think of it moving like an essay. I thought of it moving like a story, ultimately.
And so you let it organically grow, then, from
yeah.
being about a tooth to being about a bar in Japan and probably, you know, a whole other underlying emotions. I'm quite
yeah.
sure. Yeah. Better.
Well, because we went to this bar in Japan, and it was just a remarkable place, and it was, there were these cats there.
Cats.
And, but it wasn't like a cute place, like, oh, come to the bar and pet cats. It was just the owner. It wasn't much bigger than this studio. And it was just filled with smoke. And then you just saw these cats wheezing down at you
oh
from
God.
Stacked up equipment. It was really filthy. And then the waitress, I just ordered a water, but she put it on the bar next to a plate of dried cat food. And then a cat jumped up to eat, and its ass was right in my face.
Oh.
And it was just, everything about it was so perfect, but this damn tooth, you know, just ruined everything. And I just wanted to go back in time and revisit that without, you know, because you know how it is when you have a tooth problem, and it just doesn't, you can't forget about it, you know. It's constant.
I grew up on well water. I have puppy teeth. I have something. You don't want to look in my mouth either. There
wow.
are things missing. It is a mess.
Really?
It is.
Really? Because I certainly wouldn't know from looking at the front of it.
Thank you.
Huh.
But I totally relate to that, where you, like, are, I think there's an underlying, again, this is what everyone loves about your work, in case you didn't know, and I'm sure you do, but we love that you tell a story about a sequence of events or happenings or cats at a bar, and really it's so much deeper and we all can relate. So I hear that, and I know it's probably about, and I haven't read the story yet, it's probably about pains that you're kind of hiding, because I know I have had horrible teeth issues, and you have to smile and you have to be court, and
you know what, you're right, you can't talk
on.
About it.
No, nope,
you're on
you
vacation with people
it. Yes,
and they're having a good time, and you can't, like my boyfriend Hugh, though, well, he would talk about it.
Well,
he would
I would talk
about
it
and talk about it and talk about it.
Talk
about it. Right, but you yeah. can't go out with people.
No,
and it's like when you go out for people and you say, I have the worst headache. I'll be okay. If everyone's just quiet for a minute, maybe. Like, you can't do
that.
You
can't do that.
You have to suffer in silence.
Yeah, you absolutely. And that speaks to so much more emotional baggage that we all, I mean, sure, we're talking about our toothache, but really we're talking about, like, hurts from our past and things we're struggling with on an emotional level that we carry around and we don't get to talk about, right? As a human, it's just, that's what's so cool about your work, is that you pull out, it's like a telescope. And suddenly, one thing that you have talked about, that's so much more going on there.
Oh, thank you.
I love, that is why I love your work. You know, my husband and I, he is, I think I told you earlier, he's a medical, he's an orthopedic surgeon. So his mind is very technical and mine is very creative and he's very sharp and I'm very sort of open and flowy. And he loves you. He texted me from his OR, from his operating room, and said, "You're having David Sedaris on? Oh my God, tell him I'm a huge fan." So Dr. Waterman of Winston-Salem is a huge fan of yours. And he, for the same reason that I do, though, it's because we can come together over these stories and these things you've written, and we have that telescope together. And then we have conversations about how, oh, that story about Japan and the bar and the cats and the tooth. Oh, my God, have you ever been in a situation where you wanted to sob in the middle of public and because you're hurting so bad over something that you can't tell anyone about? And that's the same thing. That's the tooth.
You don't get, unfortunately, you don't get credit for, you know, because I'm always asking Hugh, okay, when do I get that extra credit for suffering so horribly? But he, because I didn't complain about it, he insists that it's all in, that I wasn't really suffering all that much. He's a horrible sick person.
Oh my
horrible
God.
Sick person.
He and my husband need to get together then and be horrible sick people together because we're the feelers, obviously. So now you and Hugh have houses all over. Right. And one of them, you're in England.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yes.
West Sussex?
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm fascinated by because I'm an Anglophile, and now you know the Duchess of Sussex, the Duke and the Duchess. That's the new...
Right.
That's so what is that? Have you sort of acclimated to that English culture, or how many... Mm. I'm curious about your personal life. Do you I mean, do you live there?
Hugh is very good. Wherever we live, Hugh, you'd think he's running for mayor. You can't believe it. And he knows everybody and says hello to everybody. And then I say to him, "Who's that person?" And he says, "I introduced you to that person 8 times. And I say, "I can't be expected to remember people who aren't famous."
So, you mean you're not going to remember me now, David? Who is that girl? I don't know who she is.
But he's really good at, and when you live in the country especially, you have to do that. You know, you have to. And so in the village we live outside of, when people go to the village, they say, "Oh, come on." When we bring Americans, "Oh, please." Because it looks fake. It's the houses have thatched roofs, and they're 400 and 500 years
looks
old.
Like a theme park?
There's
like
a 12th century. Yeah, it does. It looks fake. There's a 12th century church, and there's a little village shop that's just in an old building, you know, that sells.
That's like my heaven.
That
you're describing like where I want to die, basically.
In a pub. Oh. And nothing else, a little village tea room. But they for the wedding, they put 15 tables together right down the center of the village, and they had a little celebration. And Hugh sent me pictures of it, because I got home on that day, but I went to pick up trash instead of going to the celebration.
I heard that, too. I heard that you do that for the community. They named a garbage truck after you.
And I have responsibilities, so I couldn't sit around and...
and enjoy a wedding. You needed to pick up trash.
Yep.
Oh, my God. So do you consider England your home, or do you consider these other places
home? It's home now, I guess.
It's home now with you.
I mean, I don't... Yeah, I guess when I think of home, I think of West Sussex. I don't know. That's where most of my stuff is.
Yeah.
That's all it takes for me is most of my stuff. It's not like when people say, "Oh, is that where your heart is?" There's a little chip of ice where my heart would be.
Stop it.
So I don't really. It's where my chip of ice would be, I guess.
The lipoma. You just think that's where it was. It's gone. No, as a military child, I moved all over. So when people ask, "Where's your home?" And my home is here where I am now, because it's where, you know, it's here in Winston-Salem, because that's where my husband is, where my stuff is. And so I feel the same way, where it's kind of like home. What is that?
I remember like 10 or so years ago, there was this American Life episode about this woman, and I think she lived in Minnesota, and she grew up in the house that she lived in, and they moved the house. They picked up and moved the house like 10 feet back, and she was weeping because her view wasn't the same. And I thought, okay, you're a little too attached to that. I mean, I can't imagine never wanting to leave where you are.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine, I hope I haven't moved for the last time. I like to move. I like moving to a new place. I don't, like when we left Normandy, Hugh goes back and Hugh says, aren't you coming with me? And I say, no, I left.
I'm the same way.
I said goodbye to those people.
Oh my gosh.
And I said goodbye and I don't need to see them again.
Do you feel guilty though? Like, I feel a little heartless that okay, I moved from these other places and I said goodbye to those friends and I'm making new friends here and I don't mourn that. I'm here. I'm living in this present.
I think that's healthy. I mean, I don't mourn it either. I mean, Hugh is so busy, like, feeling sad that he left this place and this place and this place. I don't at all. I said, you know, when I had a nice time there, but I said goodbye, and then I'm ready to try something new.
I'm absolutely the same way. So, but you have houses in London, too? I saw this was on NPR, so I'm not saying it.
Really?
I'm not giving away.
Yeah, I have a house in London, and then we have a house in Sussex.
In Sussex. Do you go back and forth, like, for...
Yeah, it's like an hour and 15 minutes.
Okay, yeah.
Train journey, so it's nothing.
I am one of the few people who is absolutely devoted to all things British, and I have never been, and I have been overseas.
Really?
I've been to Europe. Hmm. I studied abroad in Italy. Croatia. I've been all over, and I have never been to the UK, so...
Well, we lived in... I was never a Francophile, and we lived in France. And you know what? I'm a Francophilophobe. Like, I have
You're afraid of people who are in love with France?
Exactly.
Well, thank God I'm not.
And then I was never an Anglophile. I just kind of wound up there.
You just wound up.
Anglophiles, American Anglophiles wear hats.
I wear hats.
You go to England and you hear an American accent...
Oh, I see.
And 9 times out of 10, the person's wearing a hat. Like if you go to the flea market or something.
Yeah.
It's an American who's come to England, wants to fit in, so she has a hat on.
If I did that, it would be bad.
It would be what?
If I did that, would that be bad?
I would make fun of you.
I would be worthy of that. Yeah. Yes, I hope you would. Because you see my closet. I've got all sorts of hats I can't wear here because people will think I'm crazy. If I have a fascinator that's out like this, it's poofy. So, yeah, I need to come there. Or I need to go to the Outer Banks in North Carolina where they accept things like that, I'm told. Possibly. No. Getting nothing from you, so it must not be.
Well, no, where we are on Emerald Isle, it's it's interesting because you're in a community where a lot of the homeowners aren't there. You know, they're renting their properties out,
or
sometimes they're there. He has met quite a few people who own those houses, but I'm only there for a few weeks out of the year, so.
And yet that is basically where, I mean, not that exact place, but that's the basis of this new book, is the beach house really setting.
Yes, so we bought a house on Emerald Isle, and... the houses there, we used to go there as children, and the houses there then all had pun names, right? Like Crab-a-dabba-doo and Clam-a-lot and Doing Our Thing.
I want one.
And now a lot of the houses have names like God's Place and Dolphin Song. So our house had a dumb name, and so we changed it to the C-section.
Oh.
And then we bought the house next to ours, and we're going to change the name either to Canker Shores or the Amniotic Shack.
I personally like the Amniotic Shack. I think that would absolutely fit in well with your neighbors. That's the Amniotic Shack over there. You could serve oysters. It would really flow well. So,
but now people are building all of these, they call them sandcastles, you know, and they have so 17 people can, rent a house. But can you imagine 17 people you'd want to go on vacation with?
No. I mean,
so these are older houses,
family, no.
The ones that we have. Older for there, which means like 1980, you know, 1978. But a lot of the new ones, I don't know, I feel like they don't... I feel like there's not a house down there that you would stop and say, wow, look at that house. Like, there's not a exciting house, architecturally exciting house. It's like a lot of the houses look like somebody watched Dynasty. and said, I want that.
Good God.
But they don't seem to have anything to do with the beach. Do you know what I mean? Like, they're not on stilts anymore. Like, all that area is filled in.
What's your house look like? I mean, not that...
It's nothing special if you were... You know, it's on stilts.
Yeah. But it still has that feel, though, that sort of old beach feel. Because I know I've been to Outer Banks many times. Nag's Head, we have some friends that have a place that they said, come, and we're sure. So it's beautiful down there, but I can't imagine Sandcastle. I guess I haven't been there since they changed it and built things up in a different way.
Yeah, well, they're McMansions, but people call them Sandcastles.
Gosh. Wow. Well, this...
And they don't have pun names.
Which is just makes them not magical at all.
Yeah.
Because I know.
I mean, our house in England has a name. It's called Swan Cottage, but it came with that name, so I don't know. But the only other house we looked at was called Faggot Stacks.
Oh, good.
And then the people who bought it...
Those are cigarettes there, right?
Yeah, but I think they meant like a wood, like to kindling.
Right,
stacks of kindling.
Right.
But the people who bought Faggot Stacks changed the name. And that was one good thing about Faggot Stacks was the name. And so now I feel like, okay, give me the name. And I'll change Swan Cottage to Faggot Stacks.
I just want you to keep on rolling and saying that. Jim can't even keep the camera steady. My God. So, off of that subject, tell me why you were in El Paso. We talked before we began the show that your title story has to do with El Paso.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you said you were there just... a month or so ago? And I lived there for 10 years.
I go on lecture tours. And so I've been three times on lecture tours to El Paso. And the second time I went, I had this lipoma, and I had gone to a surgeon on the coast of North Carolina to remove it. And he said he could remove it. And I said, good, because I want to feed it to a snapping turtle. Because I just thought the snapping turtle would like to eat a lipoma. Like anything... I remember a couple of years ago, this woman in Florida got into huge trouble because she was an EMT worker, and somebody lost a foot in a car accident, and she took it home and used it to train her dog, and she got in huge trouble, which they couldn't sew the foot back on.
What are you gonna do with
it? If it was my foot, I'm not a dog person. If they used it to train a cat, I would have been happier, but I would have said, like, okay, if that's what you want to do with my foot.
It's your foot.
I mean, so many things are wasted. You know, like if you legs that are amputated, they're, I don't know, I guess they're buried or burned, but there are alligators out there, or you could take it to the zoo and throw it to a wolf. I mean, it's just, instead it's wasted. So I thought, I'm going to feed my tumor to a turtle. I don't want it to go to waste. So I went to El Paso, and I said that on stage, and this woman came up and said, I'll cut it out of you. And I'll let you keep it. And so I said, well, I've got a show and I have a book signing. And she said, I'm a night owl. So after the book signing, she cut the lipoma out of me and shipped it on ice to my sister Lisa, put it in her freezer.
You accept, you were the, it was delivered to you.
Yes.
Wow. That is a precious thing.
And then I fed it to a turtle. Who was happy to have it.
Wow. And we talked about earlier, these things happen in El Paso. I completely understand and know these things happen every day there. There is some strange business. It's
you know, I got to say, I really like El Paso.
Oh, I loved it.
And it's a kind of a place, it doesn't feel like anywhere else in America.
No.
And it's a place where you go and 90% of the audience is Mexican.
Yep.
Or of Mexican descent. And that feels really good to me.
It's real there. Like, it's grit reality there. And there's no escaping it. There's no sort of niceties or I mean, they're nice people. They're amazingly loving people. But they're genuinely like that. They're just, it's just salt of the earth.
But
that's
I went to a
like.
Place this time, and I had a Juarez dog.
Oh, okay. Juarez
and
is
the first place. No, it's a hot dog called a Juarez dog.
Oh, yeah.
In the first place. All right, it took 15 minutes for them, because they wrap it in bacon and then do something to it. And it had
a lot of bacon on this tour.
It had mayonnaise on it.
See, now I...
And I was in such a bad mood by the time they brought it to me, and then they piled so much on it that you pick it up and
mayonnaise.
It all just falls.
Now, if there had been menudo on that, I would have been like, oh, yeah, I've seen that sometimes. But, wow, yeah. Mayonnaise.
It's always something in El Paso, isn't it?
It is. They always try to trick you up somehow there, but they're just trying to be entertaining, probably. But, wow, I love that you've been to my old hometown, which would then be two hometowns ago, but I loved it out there. I thought they were amazing people. Do you go back often?
I just go. I have a lecture agent. He sets up tours for me, and I just...
Do you speak at UTEP, or...?
No, in a theater.
In a theater?
They
tell me
where to go, and I go.
Wow.
And sometimes, you know, usually you go to a town, and you don't have any time to do anything, and you know, you meet people at the show, and sometimes you meet people, and they tell you amazing things. And last night, I met someone who is unschooled. Had you heard of unschooling?
No.
I said, you mean homeschool? And she said, no, we're unschooled. And I'd met somebody else who'd done that. So you take your you'd say to your children, you should learn something. And then that's it.
Oh.
And then they learn what they want to learn in their own time. This one girl was in high school, and she said, I've learned all about the Manson family.
Oh, dear God. Well, bless her. I bet she's...
she's unschooled.
You know what? The next book you give her should be your book. It's perfect. She can learn from it. She can take notes. She can unschool herself. This is David Sedaris on Bookmarked with Sarah McCoy. It has been so much fun. I wish we had a whole nother segment to talk. I think we could probably talk on and on and on. His book, Calypso, is out now. It just came out on Tuesday. He is on book tour. He's going to be all over. So if you see him, go to his website. If you see him coming to your city, definitely get your ticket early, as we learned here in Winston-Salem. Go out, see him, buy the book no matter what. You heard him now talk on the radio. You're ready to read this book. You will love it. We all love David. Thank you for coming, David.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
It's been such a pleasure.
You're listening to Afternoon Jazz at 90.5 FM, WSNC Winston-Salem. Jazz in all its colors from the campus of Winston-Salem State University. I'm Jim Steele. Thanks, many thanks to Sarah McCoy for bringing David Sedaris by to us. And hello to everyone over at Bookmarks and everyone who was lucky enough to get a ticket to see David tonight. Coming up at the top of the hour is National Public Radio News. Then we'll go on to the third hour of Afternoon Jazz.
If it's information you want,
we've got you covered.
Around the world or right here in our community. News from NPR at the top of every hour, Monday, Friday, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Empowering You with Calvin Patterson. Monday, Public Morality with Byron Williams. Tuesday, African Worldwide Now with WSSU Professor James Pope. Wednesday, On the Media, Friday, all at 7 p.m.
Latino USA, Saturdays at 2 p.m., and the nationally acclaimed Democracy Now!, Sundays at 7 p.m., Monday through Thursday at 8 p.m.
Keeping the triad in the know.
We're more than just jazz.
WSNC 90.5 FM.